Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
We are in Leviticus today. This is the Zaria section, which is Leviticus 12, as well as Leviticus chapter 13. That's what we're going to be studying. Lots of laws and rules about how to live your life in bodily fluids, so that's pretty much what we're discussing. It's not all of them, of course. The following section also, after 13, chapter 14 and 15, cover more bodily fluid stuffs and issues like that, but we're covering just the first part of it, which is chapter 12 and chapter 13. Leviticus chapter 12. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, when a woman conceives and gives birth to a male, she should be contaminated for a 7-day period, as during the days of her separation, infirmity, shall she be contaminated. On the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. For 33 days, she shall remain in blood of purity. She may not touch anything sacred, and she may not enter the sanctuary until the completion of her days of purity. If she give birth to a female, she shall be contaminated for 2 weeks, as during her separation. And for 66 days, she shall remain in her blood of purity. Upon the completion of the days of her purity for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring a sheep within its first year for a burnt offering, and a young dove or a turtle dove for a sin offering, to the entrance of the tent of meeting. To the Kohen, he shall offer it before the Lord and atone for her. And she shall become purified from the source of her blood. This is the law of one who gives birth to a male or to a female. But if she cannot afford a sheep, then she shall take 2 turtle doves or 2 young doves, one for burnt offering and 1 for a sin offering. And the Kohen shall provide atonement for her, and she shall become purified. Chapter 13. The Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, if a person will have on the skin of his flesh a sais, or a sapach, or a behers, it shall become a tsaras, or tarat, affliction of the skin out of his flesh. He shall be brought to Aaron the Kohen, or to one of his sons, the Kohenim. The Kohen shall look at the affliction of the skin of his flesh. If hair in the affliction has changed to white, and the affliction's appearance is deeper than the skin of the flesh, it is a tzarat, affliction. The Kohen shall look at it and declare him contaminated. If it is a white beres on the skin of his flesh, and the appearance is not deeper than the skin, and the hair is not changed to white, then the Kohen shall quarantine the affliction for a 7-day period. The Kohen shall look at on the 7th day, and behold, the affliction retained its color, and the affliction did not spread on the skin. Then the Kohen shall quarantine it for a 2nd 7-day period. The Kohen shall look at it again on the 7th day, and behold, if the affliction has dimmed, and the affliction is not spread on the skin, the Kohen shall declare impure. It is a mispas. He shall immerse his garment and become pure. If the mispas should spread on the skin, after it has been shown to the Kohen for his purification, it shall be shown to the Kohen again. The Kohen shall look, and behold, the mispas has spread on the skin. The Kohen shall declare him contaminated. It is tzarat. If a tzarat affliction will be upon a person, he shall be brought to the Kohen, and the Kohen shall look, and behold, it is a white sais on the skin, and it shall change, and it has changed hair to white, or there is healthy or live flesh within the sais. It is an old tzarat on the skin of his flesh. The Kohen shall declare him contaminated. He shall not quarantine it, for it is contaminated. If the tzarat will erupt on the skin, and the tzarat will cover the entire skin of the affliction from his head to his feet, wherever the eyes of Kohen can see, the Kohen shall look and behold, the affliction has covered his entire flesh. He shall declare the affliction to be pure. Having turned completely white, it is pure. On the day healthy flesh appears in it, it should be contaminated. The Kohen shall look at the healthy flesh and declare him contaminated. The healthy flesh is contaminated. It is tzarat. But if the flesh, healthy flesh, changes again and turns white, he shall become the Kohen. The Kohen shall look and behold, the affliction has changed to white. The Kohen shall declare the affliction pure. It is pure. If flesh will have an inflammation on its skin and will have healed, and in, on the place of the inflammation, there will be white tzitz or a white baras streaked with red, it should be shown to the Kohen. The Kohen shall look and behold, its appearance is lower than the skin. Its hair has turned white. The Kohen shall declare him contaminated. It is a tzarat, affliction, that erupted on the inflammation. But the Kohen looks at it, and behold, there is no white hair in it. It is not lower than the skin, and it is dim. The Kohen shall quarantine it for 7 days. If it spreads on the skin, the Kohen shall declare him contaminated. It is an affliction. If the breast remains in its place without spreading, it is the scarring of the inflammation. The Kohen shall declare him pure. If a person will have a burn from fire on his skin, and the healed skin of the burn is a white bares, that streaked with red or is all white, the Kohen shall look and behold, the hair is turned white in the bares, and its appearance is deepened in the skin. It is tzarat, that erupted on the burn. The Kohen shall declare him contaminated, and is its tzarat, affliction. And if the Kohen looks at it, and behold, there is no white hair in the bares, and it is not lower than the skin, and it is dim. The Kohen shall quarantine for 7 day period. The Kohen shall look at it on the seventh day. If it has spread in the skin, the Kohen shall declare him contaminated. It is a tzarat, affliction. But if the bares remains in its place, not spreading the skin, and it is dim, it is a tzais of the burn. The Kohen shall declare him pure, for it is the scarring of the inflammation. A man or woman in whom there will be an affliction on the scalp or in the beard, the Kohen shall look at the affliction and behold, its appearance is deeper than the skin. Within it is weak, golden-colored hair. The Kohen shall declare him contaminated. It is a nitzek, a tzarat of the head or the beard. But if the Kohen looks at the nitzek affliction and behold, its appearance is not deepened in the skin, but there is no dark hair within it, the Kohen shall quarantine the nitzek affliction for 7 days. The Kohen shall look at the affliction on the seventh day, and behold, the tzek had not spread, no golden hair was in it, and the appearance of the tzek is not deep in the skin. Then he shall shave himself, but he shall not shave the tzek. And the Kohen shall quarantine the tzek for a second 7 day period. The Kohen shall look in the tzek on the seventh day, and behold, the tzek had not spread in the skin. The appearance is not deep in the skin. The Kohen shall declare him pure. And he shall immerse his clothing, and he is pure. But if the nitzek shall spread on the skin after he has been declared pure, and the Kohen shall look at it, and behold, the nitzek has spread on the skin, the Kohen need not examine it for golden hair. It is contaminated. But if the nitzek has retained its appearance, and the dark hair has sprouted in it, the nitzek is healed. It is pure. The Kohen shall declare it pure. If a man or woman has spots on the skin of their flesh, white spots, the Kohen shall look and behold, on the skin of the flesh are dim white spots. It is a borach that is erupted in the skin. It's pure. If the hair of the man's head falls out, he is bald at the back of the head, and he's pure. If his hair falls out to the front of his head, he is frontally bald. He is pure. If the posterior or frontal baldness, there shall be a white affliction streaked with red, is an eruption of tzarat on his posterior or frontal baldness. The Kohen shall look at it, and behold, there is a tzais affliction that is white streaked with red, and is posterior or frontal baldness, like the appearance of tzarat on the skin of the flesh. He is a person with tzarat. He is contaminated. The Kohen shall declare him contaminated, his affliction is upon his head. The person with tzarat in whom there is affliction, his garments shall be rent, his hair on his head shall be unshorn, and he shall cloak himself up to his lips. He is to call out, contaminated, contaminated, all the days of the affliction is upon him. He shall remain contaminated. He is contaminated. He shall dwell in isolation. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. If there shall be a tzarat affliction in a garment, a woolen garment or a linen garment, or in the warp or woof of the linen or wool, or in the leather or anything fashioned of leather, and the affliction shall be deep red or green, in the garment of the leather, the warp or woof, or any leather utensil, it is a tzarat affliction. It should be shown to the Kohen. The Kohen shall look at the affliction. He shall quarantine the affliction for a 7 day period. He shall look at the affliction on the seventh day. If the affliction is spread in the garment, or the warp, or the woof, or the leather, or whatever purpose leather has been fashioned, the affliction is a malignant tzaraat. It is contaminated. He shall burn the garment, or warp, or woof, of the wool or linen, or any leather utensil in which the affliction may be. For it is a malignant tzaraat. It shall be burned in fire. If the Kohen shall look and behold the affliction is not spread in the garment, the warp, or woof, or any leather utensil, the Kohen shall command, and they shall wash the area of the affliction, and he shall quarantine it for second seven-day period. The Kohen shall look at the affliction after the affliction has been washed, and behold, the affliction has not changed its color, and the affliction is not spread. It is contaminated. You shall burn it in the fire. It is a penetrating affliction in his worn garment, or in his new garment. But the Kohen shall look and behold, the affliction grew dimmer after it was washed. He shall rip it from the garment, or from the leather, or from the warp, or from the woof. If it appears again in the garment, or warp, or woof, or in any leather utensil, it is an eruption. You shall burn it in fire, that which contains the affliction. If the garment, or warp, or woof, or the leather utensil has been washed, and the affliction left them, it should be immersed again, it should become pure. This is the law of tzaraat, affliction. A garment of wool, or of linen, or the warp or woof, or the leather utensil, to clear it pure, or to clear it contaminated. Lots of fun reading, huh? It's an interesting section, lots of kind of gross things to think about, but it's part of life. Any questions or comments regarding this section? Of course, it obviously starts out in chapter 12, discussing, you know, the flow of a person, the babies and things of that. And of course, continues on to contamination of skin diseases and things of that nature. Any questions or comments regarding this section that I can answer for you? Well, that's easy. Guess there aren't any. All right. So, as you'll notice in chapter 12... Of course, chapter 12 focuses dominantly on the birth of a child and how it affects the mom in various ways. This is obviously talking about the uncleanness from a newborn, or not from the newborn person, but in the process of giving birth. You'll notice there's obviously a distinction between male and female. Life in this section starts with contamination. That's what you're looking at. The birth child comes forth, life starts dirty. Not the child's dirty, but life starts dirty. The mother starts out, in order to give birth, produces a lot of flow, a lot of contamination. Now, don't think, or we frequently consider or think of contamination as like, well, I did something wrong. I did a sin, therefore I'm isolated, I'm contaminated, I'm not allowed to be part of. Or I did an iniquity or transgression. This has nothing to do with sins, iniquities, transgressions. This section is only to do with what is dirty, physically dirty, and what is not. Those of you who have given birth, I have not done so. I don't intend to. Those of you who have given birth, thankfully, you will notice there's a lot of fluid that comes out in the process. There's blood, there's meconium, there's the water that comes out. There's lots of stuff comes out. And of course, there's mucus, the afterbirth comes out. Lots of stuff comes out. Whole bunch of stuff. Slew of things. And of course, obviously, you have to cut the umbilical cord and all that. There's a lot of things happen. And there's no want of buckets to collect all this stuff that comes out. I've been there a number of times, not personally experiencing it, but personally trying to clean up the mess. It is messy. The purpose is to isolate that which is dirty or messy or contaminated away from people. If you recall, when there is the woman has her monthly cycle, she is isolated or contaminated for that month. For that week, actually, but for the time period of the cycle. The purpose of these 7 days and 33 days and 14 days and 66 days, and all the extra days you have to wait, the purpose is that any fluid flow that comes out of the mom for that whole period is not a restart of her normal monthly cycle. It is all classified as one big cycle. That's its point. That's its purpose. So you have the first 7 days after a son's born. Let's see, I'm going to draw a line. See, two different topics. The first 7 days. We'll discuss why it's 7 versus 14 for the girl. The first 7 days, she is grouped or classified in her monthly cycle groupings. You treat those 7 days as she would her monthly cycle. So the first 7 days a week is monthly cycle. That means at the end of a monthly cycle, what is a woman supposed to do? Well, she gets a bath. At the first 7 days, she gets a bath. Because it says she should be as in her impurity, her monthly impurity, as it instructs. And at the monthly impurity means at 7 days, you get a bath to clean it. And then the cycle of counting begins. For a boy, you start from that at the bath, 33 days. Any fluid flow that comes out of her during those 33 days is all grouped into the same original 7-day cycle. It's all grouped there. It's not a new start. It's not a new beginning. Oh, now she can go, you know, have a child again. It's not. It's that there will be fluid flowing out of her for many days, in some cases weeks, and in certain cases years, that comes out. All of it's grouped the same grouping. It's all categorized the same class. This course, 7 days and 33 days, that's how it's broken up. That's why they broke it up in 7 and 33. They wanted the 7 days as to treat it as her cycle. Now, you notice there's a difference between girls and boys. In the girl's case, it's 14 days. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. Everybody and their mother has a reason why there's 14 days versus 7. Not a single one of them are supported by the Bible. It's not in the text. It doesn't tell you why. Doesn't say why it's 14 versus 7. So whatever reason you can think of, and that's what you want to hang your hat on, enjoy it. That's your reason, okay? I do know why the boy is 7. That's obvious. But why the 14th of the girl, I couldn't tell you. It just is. Because he gets circumcised the 8th day. She won't be allowed to touch him if she's still in her days of impurity when he's circumcised. So she has to be out of it by the time she can hold on to the boy. Because he is officially once circumcised, he is now classified as, he is a male. He is no longer a child, he's a male once he's circumcised. So when a woman is touching, a woman is in her monthly impurity cycle, she's not supposed to be handling or dealing with men. That's her whole point. They're not supposed to be interacting that way. I know he's a baby. That's the whole plot. That 7-day period is make sure that when that 8th day shows up, she has full authority to take hold on to, care for everything that's required for circumcision. I know why that's done. That's not part of it. We're discussing breast. We're talking mixing of blood. There's blood that comes out of the boy on the 7th and the 8th day. They don't want the blood contamination process.
So technically, she can't take care of her son.
If there's blood involved.
Well, if she's on a period, she's going to bleed.
Is his blood involved too?
No.
Right.
So does that make a difference?
Right. Okay. Because blood is life and contamination. On the 7th, the 8th day, that the boy's blood, his life, his contamination is now exposed. He is now flowing out too. Just like she is flowing out.
So they
both are classified as contaminated. Well, if she's still contaminated and he's still contaminated, technically speaking, they shouldn't touch each other. Because they're both flowing of fluid is coming out of their bodies. That isn't a normal process. But if she's clean after the first 7-day cycles, that means on the 8th day, her blood flow, though may still be coming out, richly speaking, it's not considered important anymore. Meaning she can touch the boy, though he has fluid coming out of him as well. That's a standard cycle. Yes.
Isn't it...
Hold on a minute. Go ahead.
What about a bleeding from falling or getting hurt? Is that the same thing? You're dirty, you're contaminated, or is this different?
That's a matter of an opinion on those. But the next section, which we didn't cover today, 14 and 15, it discusses fluid coming out of the body that is semen, if it's a male, or other fluids coming out, or coming out of your pores, or that's not normally flowing out, and how that's handled, how you are bathed, washed, cared for, taken care of, and how the contamination applies. So when there's fluid flowing out of your body, including your skin, it's because there's blood coming out, you have to care for it in a particular way, and how it's mended or wrapped up or treated. So there are ways which we treat those things. Let's cover the next section, which we didn't cover today. So any of like a skin of a scraping of a knee, you have to treat it in a particular way, as opposed to leaving it. Right. What parent would leave it? What child, what human would leave it? Oh, look, I cut my arm off. Well, that's okay. I'll move on. You're going to try to fix it. The point is, don't leave it. It is potential of danger to either the individual or anyone who's dealing with blood. Now, those of you who aren't terribly familiar with what happened 100 and some odd years ago, and any time for the previous, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years, germ theory didn't exist. No one had comprehension what infection was. We had general rules of care, had no idea what it meant. We couldn't see a germ. No one could see it. Yeah, the microscope weren't invented until mid-1800s. So they had no knowledge what this stuff was. So when dealing with blood, all they knew was blood showing up somehow relates to disease, infection, or some pain, death, inflammation. Bad things happen with this. So when you deal with fluid flow and problems with bodies, don't cross-contaminate. Those of you who recall the surgeons of the 1860s and all the more blood they had on their clothing, the more successful they were considered, and so everybody went to them. Oh, look, he has lots of blood. He must be really good at what he does. The opposite of what we think of, but that's how they would advertise. The more blood on their clothing, the more that was their advertisement signs. That's pretty common. That's why you got the red and white stripe on the barber shops. That's where they came from. That was the red towel they're open business. And the barber shops are the same as surgeons, by the way. So a lot of things were different back then, had no knowledge what this stuff was and how to deal with it. Well, the Bible is giving instruction on how to deal with basic things. And in particular, when it comes to fluid flowing in the body for the mother which gives birth, as well as next chapters when it comes out of a male for other body parts, you are dirty. Don't intermingle. Whatever the reason, don't intermingle. That's how we're separating them. Sorry, go ahead, Rose.
Wasn't it customary for the father to be at the circumcision as opposed to the mother?
It was still customary for the father to be there. But you'll notice that when circumcision happens, blood continues comes off the boy for usually a few days. Because there's no scabbing. That area doesn't scab. It just kind of, like your inner mouth, it kind of heals itself. It doesn't actually scab over like we think of a scab. That area doesn't do that. But yeah, blood still comes out for multiple days. But you're right. Father's customarily the one who's there. And modern day tradition, the grandfather's the one who holds the boy while he's being cut. That's just modern day tradition. Yes?
Oh, I was just going to say, because the Jews were taught to be so clean during the Dark Ages when they had the plagues, they did not have them.
Yeah.
And they've always been blamed for things that they didn't do because they knew how to stay cleaned.
Right. Basic principles of cleanliness. So that's the reason why 7 days. Why the girl gets 14? I don't know. She just gets 14. You think a reason? Think a reason. That's fine. So at this first 7 days, the bathing happens. Of course, the girl, it's 14 days. The mother gets a bath. And then following this boy's 33 days, the girl gets 66. Yes, Carrie.
Well, the other thing I was just going to say is that, obviously you're going to bleed for a while after you've had a child. And the thing about it is, you can still touch the baby even though you're bleeding. It's just the baby can't go in the temple if that happens. That's, for the ritual thing, for the circumcision, that's something specific.
Right.
But
every day following that is you are isolated
right
from the temple.
Right. So you're just not going in the temple. It's not that you've done something wrong and there's a lot of uncleanness that we just can't avoid. But, God's pointing out, especially for the priesthood who is supposed to be in the temple, look, if your wife has this going on,
you stay away from her because you're busy.
Yeah. If you have to serve in the temple,
that's the big deal.
Thrust of what's going on here.
There's a lot of stuff happens in this section. It applies to many people for different reasons. Let's see here. So after the end of the 33 days or 66 days, the mother is bathed again, and that's when she brings her offering, whatever the offering may be. Now, I mentioned before, it's not an offering due to sin. Giving birth isn't a sin. It's offering of, I was once had contamination on me, or flowing out of me in this case, and now I don't anymore. So I'm creating an atonement, or bring myself back to God in this way. It's no different than a mother praying, thanking God for the fact that she's alive and she survived it, and the fluid flow has stopped. Most of us pray for that when we gave birth, or when our wives gave birth, for that all things went well. So that's the atonement offering. It isn't because of sin, it's because she was just separated from communion, from the worship of God in that time period. Now she's not anymore. Any questions regarding chapter 12 of Leviticus and the birthing of a child, or any fluid flow that came out of it? All right. Go ahead.
I didn't learn this stuff until now, and I've had 5 kids. I've never done any purification stuff. Is it like covered over? I'm just curious.
No, yeah, it's a fair question. General rule, when you don't know something, it's very difficult to be held to it. Right. So if you didn't know something and you've gone along your way, whatever you didn't know is what you didn't know then. What you know now is what you know now. So when we learn something, we improve. It's no different than a child learning mathematics or learning how to read. They don't know all the rules of reading. They're learning know this, know that, and they have simple words only. But they try to figure out the more complex words sometimes that don't follow those rules. And they get confused, they get lost, get frustrated. It's not their fault. They didn't do anything wrong. They didn't know all the rules. You teach the rules, and then they move on and get better. They ignore the past. It doesn't fix it. So we don't usually apply a rule you've learned now to whatever happened in the past. Yeah, kind of late to have kids now. Yes, Carrie.
I can't remember where it is, but there is a sacrifice for the unknown sin.
For unknown sins, that's true.
Yeah, so and it says in there, there's a special spot in the Torah, and it says if someone has sinned or transgressed the Torah.
Just in case you didn't know.
And they don't know it.
Yeah.
Then the day that they find out they did, then there's a specific sacrifice for that.
That is true. When you've transgressed something,
right.
It is in Leviticus 2, I forgot as well. I don't recall off the top of my head where it is. Trespass offering. Well, I'm not going to search for it now, but there are offerings for those types of things when you're trying to follow what you were unaware of. But that's usually reserved for the example of, you know, this XYZ, whatever it is against the rules. And you didn't realize you broke the rules. It's not usually applied to, had no clue this was a rule. Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, the baby's born and she's unclean, and the baby is considered unclean too, or no?
No,
so,
baby's not.
So yeah. Who cares for the baby?
Well, she is to care for the baby as long as she is physically able to do so. It's the uncleanness does not apply to the infant as the infant being unclean. The only time the infant is unclean is if it's a male and there's fluid flow coming out of the circumcision. That the infant is now unclean at that point.
8 days later.
That's 8 days later. There's no point in which she is unclean in a particular way that she cannot care for her child. There's no instance or no scenario which that occurs. Now, it could theoretically. Meaning, if for some reason, if you were trying to follow the laws of the Torah and you circumcised your son on day one, which many hospitals do, then theoretically speaking, Torah rules, he has fluid flow at the same time as she does, and she's not clean yet. That would be breaking the Torah. But then again, circumcising on day one is also breaking the Torah. You flipped it all out anyway, so what does it matter? So normally, if you're following the Torah, there is no scenario in which she's contaminated and he is, and they can't interact. That's not the normal case.
Another thought. All right, so she'd be breastfeeding her baby. Is that considered clean or not clean?
That's considered clean. That's an interesting scenario. This is a debate that's happened many times, and people have argued one way or the other. You note that for humans, according to the Torah, is pig milk clean or unclean? You think unclean, right? Well, is human milk clean or unclean? Now, both pigs and humans are both unclean. I can't eat a human. I can't eat a pig. Both are unclean. But yet, human milk is considered clean, and pig milk is considered unclean. It's an interesting conundrum. Same problem with camel's milk, or any kind of milk you got. It's a, just because it comes from an unclean animal, does that make it unclean? I can't answer the question. Because a human is an unclean animal, by definition. Therefore, everything that comes out of us is unclean. That should theoretically include breast milk. However, it's been long since, but from the beginning of time with Adam and Eve, God pointed out, breast milk, that's okay. The baby's supposed to eat that stuff. That's normal. So it's an interesting conundrum as far as what classifies milk as clean or unclean. We don't know. It is currently the way it is until God straightens it out. But in general rule, she's allowed to interact with a child at all times, unless the child's unclean. Now, what scenario would the child be unclean if it didn't go through a circumcision? Probably disease. That can make a child unclean. And that would likely put the mother unclean too. But she's trying to care for a diseased child. Clean and unclean is thrown out the window when you're dealing with a disease that you're trying to cure. Yes?
Now, midwives used to take care of the birthing of the baby. I thought that they also cared for the baby a lot of times, like Moses, you know, someone, nursemaid to care for the
child. To some degree, I don't know all the original rules for midwives. I know some of them. But those rules were mostly written down maybe 150 years ago. I don't know what they were prior to that. So as far as a midwife and what extent of care for the infant they gave, I can't answer. I doubt it included nursing. That is not a normal thing for a midwife to offer, but it may have included that too. It's conceivable. Any other questions or comments regarding the birthing of a child? All right, so that's the giving the birth and having a baby and what the mom goes through. And if you can think of a good reason why the girl gets 14 days, you can hang your hat on that and enjoy. Chapter 13. Tzaraat, contamination of pretty much everything else, but not including giving a birth to a child. Now, we read this section, chapter 13, discusses, obviously, for all these different conditions of Tzaraat. You got the leprosy of the skin or the body, and this color or that color, this color hair, that deep or this shallow, yada, yada, yada. Most your Bibles will translate that as leprosy. It doesn't necessarily have to only be leprosy. There are other diseases of the skin that can also be included. But leprosy is a common one at the time which they were concerned with, because that's what dealt with most things. So when it was translated as leprosy, that's what's pretty much been the standard way of translating it. There are other skin diseases that are not necessarily leprous, but they are also still equally debilitating. Those of you who noticed, in chapter 13, there's some weirdness going on in it. For example, if I have a spot on my body, I'm dirty, I'm contaminated. But if the spot spreads to my whole body, I'm clean. Does that sound like a normal disease? Does that sound like something you say, oh, well, yeah, he's not contaminated anymore? Okay, yeah, leprosy, whatever it is, it spread my whole body, I have no normal-looking flesh left, but now I'm pure. I'm clean, I'm not contaminated, I can interact with people, I can spread whatever it is I have. I can go to the temple, I can do whatever I need to do. Because it covers my whole body. That's backwards, isn't it? You think it'd be backwards from a disease. When you have a disease, you isolate, you separate. That's sanitation, isolation, hygiene, nutrition. Those are four rules. So you have a disease, those four rules apply. But for some reason, in this section, it covers the whole body, it doesn't apply anymore, you're clean. Until a normal spot appears in your skin. Then the normal spot's considered unclean, and the rest you is considered clean. It's bizarre. It's a flip. We'll talk about that briefly as to why. So this section also discusses as far as when there's a contamination in clothing or cloth or leather or whatever it may be. Later on, chapter 14 talks about a contamination in your house. If all this stuff was about contagion, trying to stop a contagious disease, this chapter would make no sense. It's not about stopping a contagious disease. It is in part about that, but that is not its whole function. Chapter 13 and Laws 14 and 15 are not about stopping disease spread. It's not. Because this is not how you do it. This is how you do some things, but not most stuff. Most stuff, this doesn't work very well. This section, however, is talking about something else, which we have discussed. I have written up here case studies. It's a quarantine. We're going to look at these case studies as to what this chapter is actually trying to convey to us. But first of all, let's look a few of the details of this chapter. So the effect of most of this tzaraat on the skin in various colors, whether it's white or deep in the skin or less of the skin, results the individual usually being isolated. That's typical what they're doing for observation purposes. Many people, I'm not saying they're right or wrong, have concluded that this section, because it does not appear to work for contamination of contagion or stopping of diseases, that it must mean something deeper than that, a spiritual effect or a spiritual thing. And it has been construed or believed or argued or whatever you want to say it has been, that these are the items that cause this disease. I'm writing them down for you. I don't agree with it. I'm writing them down for you anyways, just so you know what they are. They believe, and people have believed for many, many generations, that leprosy is a cause or is a spiritual disease on a person. Cause the following things. Number one, slander. You know what slander is? Bad thing with somebody else. It's talking behind their back and spreading a rumor, essentially. They're grouped in the same. And there's also bloodshed. Everyone knows what bloodshed is. It's killing somebody. We get a different marker because marker does not show up very well. Choose black instead.
How do we get from leprosy to bloodshed?
That's a good question. How do you get bloodshed to leprosy? That's a good question. Another argument is that leprosy has to do with you get it from God because of these things. This is the argument. Of course, here's one that's half dried up anyway. Okay. Next one is a false oath. The belief that if you have false oaths, God will strike you with leprosy. Another one is sexual immorality. I'm going to abbreviate. It happens. And it's not uncommon. People believe a lot of things. We're going to discuss this. We're going to talk about it today. Robbery is one of the arguments. And of course, selfishness is the last one. So these are the most common items that people have associated over the past, 3,000 years or so, with regarding to leprosy. Slander, bloodshed, false oath, sexual immorality, pride, robbery, and selfishness. So if you exhibit any of these things into a significant degree, the belief that God will strike you with leprosy for one of them. Now, I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I don't see it.
Why isn't there leprosy out?
Yeah, look around us. Well, there is. It's Hansen's disease. It's still around, but it's relatively rare. It's a bacteria infection. Well, it's very difficult to kill. It's not very common. Yeah, there are a lot of places around the world that you think, well, this should be all over the place. But it's not. Now, the belief, of course, would only apply to someone who was supposed to know better. Now, I'm not saying this is right or wrong. The Bible gives you a more detailed explanation of what leprosy is actually for, and it gives us examples. Yes.
Well, there are rashes and skin conditions
diseases
that pop up out of anxiety.
Yes,
and
they
anxiety
do.
Anxiety comes from a lot of
these
stuff
things
on that list.
Yes. When you believe you've done something wrong, you can bring it on yourself. As most of us know, when you, a very angry person tends to not live long. Tends, not an absolute. But they tend. Their life usually typically is shorter. It's not always the case. It's an average. So if you have a worry or stress over a long period of time for your body, it does wear and tear and it can cause problems. It's not like these things were invented off the top of somebody's head because they were bored. These lists were invented or created because they thought this kind of made sense with some of the people that they've interacted with. They had diseases. Now, this is not to say the leprosy is the solution to all of these. Just that their belief is that if someone who has leprosy probably has an issue with one of these, which may be the case, or all of them for that matter. The Bible gives us a more detailed explanation as to what God used leprosy for. Yes, Jared.
I could see slander or leprosy being a punishment for slander, because when they had leprosy, they had to go out of the camp, away from people, that way they could clear their conscience and think about what they've been saying. And
if someone thinks that, I don't know if those of you who've noticed, when something bad happens to us, most people say, "Why me? How come me, God? Why me?" Yeah, exactly. Why not you? As opposed to someone saying, okay, now something bad's happened to me, let's go back and examine my life and see what I screwed up on. That's not impossible, but less common. Don't be wrong. That should be the first thing we do. But that isn't always the first thing people usually do. The first thing is, why me? It's not fair. You're picking on me, God. Pick on somebody else for a while. As opposed to, let's go back to my list of life and say, okay, this bad stuff is going on. Let's see all the choices I've made and how I got to this scenario. But that's a different story. Our case studies are these three we're covering today initially. And then, mind you, I'm going to end early today because we have new moon this afternoon. So these first three case studies we're going to cover and discuss and see whether any of these fall into this category, meaning any of these lists of these seven items. Fall in the category of these case studies.
The light is shining on the way.
Oh, I'll make it darker.
Like Second Kings.
Yes, Second Kings. Yes. Chapter 5. Now, this is the most common case study everyone knows and has it memorized by heart, practically. The story of Naaman and Elisha. Because most people like that story, it's pretty cool. After that, we'll go to Chronicles. And then Numbers, or the other two case studies. There is a commonality among all three case studies, and I'm hoping you'll catch it. If not, don't worry about it. I'll tell you anyway. So go to 2 Kings, chapter 5. Find 2 Kings. There it is. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out on raids and had brought back captives a young girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master were the prophet, were with the prophet, who was in Samaria, for he would heal him for his leprosy." Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus said the girl who was from the land of Israel." So the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I shall send a letter to the king of Israel." So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Then he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which said, "Now be advised, when this letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy." And it happened, when the king of Israel read the letter, that he tore his clothes, and said, "Am I God to kill and make alive? This man sends a man to me to heal him of his leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he must seek to quarrel with me." So it was when Elisha, the man of God, heard the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Please, let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." When Naaman went with his horse and chariot, and they stood at the door of the house of Elisha, Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go, wash in the Jordan 7 times, your flesh will be restored to you, and you should be clean." But Naaman became furious and went away. He said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them be clean? He turned and went away in a rage. And his servant came near and spoke to him, saying, My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says, Wash, be clean? So he went down and dipped seven times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. His flesh was restored like the flesh of the little child, and he was clean. Then he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides, and came and stood before him and said, Indeed, now I know there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now therefore, please, take a gift from your servant. But he said, As the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will receive nothing. He urged him to take it, but he refused. So Naaman said, If not, please let your servant be given 2 mule loads of earth. If your servant will no longer, before your servant will no longer either burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. In this thing may the Lord pardon your servant, when my master goes in the temple of Ramon to worship there, and leans on my hand, that I bow down in the temple of Ramon. When I bow down in the temple, may the Lord please pardon your servant in this thing. They said to him, Go in peace. So they departed from him at a short distance, but Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, Look, my master has spared Naaman the Syrian, without receiving from his hand what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him, and I will take something from him. So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw him running after him, he got down from his chair to meet him. He said, Is all well? He said, All is well. My master has sent me, saying, Indeed, just now, 2 young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the mountains of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and 2 changes of garments. So Naaman said, Please, take 2 talents. He urged him, bound 2 talents of silver in 2 bags, with 2 changes of garments, and then handed them to his 2 servants, and they carried them on ahead of him. When he came to the citadel, he took from them from their hand and stored them away in the house. Then he let the men go, and they departed. Now when he went in and stood before his master, Elisha said to him, Where'd you go, Gehazi? He said, Your servant did not go anywhere. They said to him, Did not my heart go with you when the man turned back from his chariot to meet you? Is it time to receive money, to receive clothing, olive groves, vineyards, sheep, oxen, male and female servants? Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendants forever. He went out from his presence, leprous, white as snow. Now this case study, let me erase some of the stuff because I don't need all of it up here just yet. Let me erase this real quick. This case study, you see that God gave Gehazi leprosy. Now we can list a lot of reasons why. But there's one reason I want you to keep in mind in your heads while you're looking at the next 2 stories. What was Gehazi's relationship and how did he affect the relationship of God and the man he was dealing with? So God's relationship. Yes.
I understand why, is it Aaron? That when he fought to get Lot back,
Abraham fought.
He refused to take the money.
Yes, Abraham refused to take the money from King
Asala. Is this the same thing with Elisha?
Not exactly, although one could argue that. Elisha's, in this particular case, Gehazi did something very specific that God tells and warns everyone in Leviticus chapter 22 never to do. And this is what Gehazi has done. He affected God's relationship with Naaman. He did lie. Greed took over him. Yep, greed took over him. Next case study. So it's this relationship I want you to focus on. Because that's what God rails against, in particular, against all things. This is his upsetness point. It's not, God doesn't claim false oaths are the cause of people acquiring leprosy. He does not claim bloodshed is. He doesn't claim slander is. He doesn't claim sexual morality or pride or robbery or selfishness. God claims one particular thing that is why he gives leprosy to someone. And we're discussing what they are today. And these are all the case studies in the Bible pretty much say the exact same thing. They give the same example. So 2 Chronicles chapter 27 is our second case study. Now we're discussing why God uses leprosy as a tool and gives it to people. 2 Chronicles 27, starting in verse 16. This is referring to the king Uzziah. But when he, Uzziah, was strong, his heart was lifted up to his own destruction. For he transgressed against the Lord his God by entering the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. So Azariah the priest went in after him. And with him were 80 priests of the Lord, who were valiant men. They withstood the king Uzziah and said to him, "It is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Get out of the sanctuary. You have trespassed. You shall have no honor from the Lord your God." But Uzziah became furious, and he had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was angry with the priests, leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priests, in the house of the Lord, beside the incense altar. Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked at him, and there on his forehead was leprous. So they thrust him out of that place. Indeed, he also hurried to get out, because the Lord had struck him. King Uzziah was a leper until the day of his death. He dwelt in an isolated house because he was a leper, for he was cut off from the house of the Lord. Then Jotham, his son, was over the king's house, judging the people of the land. That's our second case study. That was in 2 Chronicles 27, verse 16 through 21.
Yeah, it's probably in 28, chapter 28.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. 2 Chronicles chapter 26, 16 through 21. 2 Chronicles 26, 16 through 21. I apologize. I wrote it down wrong. I said it wrong, but I read the right section. 2 Chronicles 26, I apologize. 26, 16 through 23. Yeah, I'm crazy, aren't I? Yeah, crazy new version of the Bible. I wrote it myself, right? 2 Chronicles, sorry, chapter 26, 16 through 21. That was King Uzziah. Yeah. 2 Chronicles 26, from 16 to 21. I apologize for screwing that up. Correct, yes.
You know, it's kind of interesting because when Aaron's two sons did this same thing, burning incense, God struck them dead.
Struck them dead, right.
Why didn't he strike King Uzziah dead?
Yeah, he wanted something different about Uzziah to teach him a different type of lesson. But you're right. It's the same type of thing. And that is what the point is. We're discussing and exploring individuals who changed a relationship, a particular association about God that God says never do. So in this case, in 2 Chronicles chapter 26, it says Uzziah. It was pride, but there are others who have been more prideful than Uzziah by a long shot. And they weren't struck with leprosy. But Uzziah did something in particular with regards to God. He changed a very specific relationship of God. Right. He did think it wasn't his job. The relationship I'm focusing in on here is it's called profaning God's name. You see, Gehazi profaned God's name. He took God's name and made it, brought it down low in the eyes of somebody else who's trying to understand God, trying to figure out life, trying to live their life, do the best they can. Brought God's name down low in a misrepresentation. He took what God had set aside and said, "I'm going to bring it down low in the face of Naaman. I'm going to gain something out of it. I'm going to trick Naaman into doing something to get me more money." In the case of Uzziah, Uzziah profaned God's name by allowing himself and claiming and showing everyone that he, as a king, not as a priest, was able to be such a great relationship with God to bring it down lower to his own level that he was able to associate and be with God in a way that only priests were to be. God specifically states in Leviticus 20:22, "Don't you ever profane my name." And this is what does it. Yes, Dan.
So he didn't want to take anything because that would put him down low? He didn't.
It associates. Yeah, think about. Yeah, because for example, in the world of Syria, as well as all of the other various worlds and the countries that exist, when there is a god, in particular, I'm going to say there is an idol, and an idol blesses you with whatever. What you must do to that idol? You must give it offerings, bring gifts to it, and to the priests of that idol, whatever the priest is. That you have to offer. That's how these priests get to their high class of priestliness and priesthood, as they receive all these gifts they get to personally use. That's what it's associated with. God did not want Naaman to think or believe that this is a pay-to-play type of game with God. That with you give me money, I give you gifts. It doesn't work that way. That screwed up Naaman's relationship when Gehazi came over and says, oh yeah, no, now we need the money. It messed it up. He just took what God said, don't ever do. You brought my name low as the same as an idol. You treat it like you would any other idol that's out there. You profaned my name. Uzziah did the exact same thing because kings were considered priests in most other countries. And the kings were allowed to go before the priests of whatever idol thing you can think of, rock, stone, piece of wood. And they could offer whatever they want to and they could act as if they're priests. Because that's what kings were doing. Uzziah was then bringing God's name down low to be equivalent to an idol of rock or stone, like all the other kings get to do. You profane God's name. Miriam does the same thing. Yes.
Well, I'm seeing that the first fellow who wanted to be cured of leprosy was arrogant in the fact that he thought he could buy his way to healing. And so I think this servant got wind of that and thought he could make a profit from this guy, and that the other man wasn't willing to do what God told him to do, was to, you know, to go wash seven times in the water.
He did do it. He did wash. He just wasn't
there
at first.
But he thought he could buy his way to healing.
Because he is a Gentile. His knowledge, understanding of the God of Israel is zip. Zilch. No knowledge. His experience is all idols. He knows how the idol world works. So he's going to naturally assume all gods work the same way, because every god he's ever known has always worked one way. He flipped the god's name around, changed from one schmuck to the god, or I should use the word anymore, one schmo to another schmo, it makes no difference. So as far as his world, that's how life works, pay to play, that's how it works. But in the case when he brought to Elisha, he was being shown something totally different than he ever experienced. Very strange to him. But that was the goal, yes.
Well, I'd like to bring it up to today's world, bringing God down. I hear these ministers on TV talk, sow your seed, and this will happen, and you'll prosper, and God will do this and this and this. If you sow $100 seed or $200 seed, uh-huh. And it's like I go click, you know. I don't.
Oh, really?
So the servant of the prophet was trying to bring new meaning to the term make a profit.
That's great.
So would that be the same thing today as bringing God down, bringing God low?
I cannot speak for somebody else what they think, say, or do. I can't say that. So whatever their motives are, that's their business. Me personally, there's no way I would ever do that. But that's me. That's just me. Now, what another man chooses to do with his reason behind, that's his business. He may say whatever, give, you know, just the right song and dance, and all sounds great. That's wonderful. Maybe he's 100% right. Maybe God's on his side. That's why he's so successful. Who knows? It doesn't make a difference. I can't do that. Because to me, that changes my relationship with God and the person I'm trying to teach. You see, if I start receiving funds for my teaching, it changes my relationship to the student who's paying me. It does. Well, it's a natural human reaction. It's no different than a dog doesn't bite the one who feeds it. It's a natural, normal human reaction. That's not the relationship God wanted with anybody. That wasn't the goal. That wasn't the objective. He doesn't want that type of style I will avoid certain topics that so-and-so doesn't like because, well, they pay a lot of money and they're a really good person in our community. Blah, blah, blah. It's a human thing. Don't do it. That's why I know I won't do it. Because it doesn't make me feel right. I feel wrong. It makes me feel dirty. Tzarat. So, third case study, Numbers, chapter 12. I have the right. It is Numbers chapter 12 this time. It is actually numbered 1-2. Numbers chapter 12, starting verse 1. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. They said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Now, the man of Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, "Come out, you three, the tabernacle meeting." So the three came out. The Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood at the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both went forward. He said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision, and I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" The anger of the Lord was aroused against them, and he departed. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. So Aaron said to Moses, "Oh, my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us, in which we have done foolishly, and in which we have sinned. Please do not let her be as one dead, whose flesh is half consumed, when he comes out of his mother's womb." So Moses cries to the Lord, saying, "Please heal her, God, I pray." The Lord said to Moses, "If her father had spit in her face, would she not be shamed at least 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp for 7 days. After that, she will be received again." So Miriam was shut out of the camp for 7 days. People did not journey until Miriam was brought in again. And afterward, the people moved from Hazaroth to the inner camp of the wilderness of Paran. In this case study of Miriam, and what in her relationship? How did she get leprosy? What did she do? Spoke against a servant of Moses, a servant of God, which was Moses. So Miriam spoke against Moses. How was that profaning God's name? Yes.
Well, weren't they kind of saying, "Well, why are you so good? We're good enough to be able to approach God or not." They were doing that.
It's the same thing Uzziah did. They were had brought, though they had in their heads, brought themselves up to Moses' level. In reality, they had actually brought God down to their level. They brought him, "Well, hey, he's no different than us," meaning Moses. "He's no better than we are. We know better than this. We don't marry Ethiopian women. We don't marry foreigners. That's wrong. He's doing something wrong. He's doing something against God's way." Now, wait a minute. Did God say that? Did God command that? Did God issue, "Hey, no, Moses, you're not allowed to marry anybody else, only biological descendants of Israel or Levi"? Not at all. Nothing to do with that. By them bringing themselves up to Moses' level, they actually weren't. As God points out, "In a prophet I speak to in dreams, like you, Miriam and Aaron. And a prophet I speak to in visions and dark sayings, like I do you, Aaron and Miriam. That's how I talk to you guys. You are not where Moses is. And if you're going to claim you're where Moses is, that means you're bringing me down to where you are. And that isn't true. You profane God's name." Leviticus 22, we're headed to next. Leviticus 22. It's a big deal to God. Don't profane his name. Don't make it common. This Leviticus 22, starting verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons. They separate themselves from the holy things, the children of Israel, and they do not profane my name, in whose things which they sanctify to me, I am the Lord. Say them, whoever of all your descendants throughout your generations who goes near the holy things which the children of Israel sanctified to the Lord, while he has uncleanness upon him, that person shall be cut off from my presence. I am the Lord. Whatever man is descendants of Aaron, who is a leper, who has a discharge, shall not eat the holy offerings till he is clean. Whoever touches anything made unclean by a corpse or a man and has an emission of semen, whatever touches any creeping thing which he had made himself unclean, or any person with whom he would become unclean, whatever his uncleanness may be, the person who has touched anything that should be unclean until evening. He shall not eat the holy offerings lest he washes his body with water. And when the sun goes down, he should be clean. Afterward, he may eat the offerings because it is food. Whatever dies naturally, of course, turn a beast, do not eat to defile himself, because I am the Lord. They shall therefore keep my ordinances, lest they bear sin for it and die. If they profane it, I, the Lord, sanctify them. So what's God saying? Don't profane my name. And how do you not profane my name? Don't do anything that causes this. Taking the holy things, the children of Israel, sanctified to the Lord, and make them not holy anymore. How do you make things not holy anymore? Let's look at the case studies. Gehazi, with relationship with Naaman. What did Gehazi do? What made it profane? Right. He took something he wasn't supposed to take. He took a common idol, which he brought God, which was, Naaman was now, after being cleansed, he went through a supernatural event in his existence. He is now a holy thing for all practical purposes. And he profanes Naaman, and as a result profanes God, by bringing them all down low. Uzziah did essentially the same thing, though not with a person, did with actual an offering of incense. He's profaning God's name and bringing it down low. He took something which was holy, the incense, reserved for priests alone, which we already know the Bible instructs us, the incense are prayers. So the Uzziah took the prayers of the people of Israel and brought them down low as if he was God or he was a priest. And of course, Miriam brings Moses, tries to bring him down. In reality, Moses was never allowed to be brought down. He was too humble. But brought him down, and as a result, inadvertently tried to bring God down in the process. Profaned what was God, which was once holy, i.e. Moses as well as God, what is holy, and brought them down to being, consider them or treat them as if they are not holy. You made it profane. And God rails against them, of course, all the way through this, chapter 22. You do not do so because it, or else this sin, this profaneness will be, anyone who is born in the house will be profane. You profaned God. That means you have the sin of all this stuff dumped right on you. Now, as I forgot who it was, who mentioned it earlier, the two sons of Aaron also profaned God by offering what's called profane fire or a strange fire. What was the strange fire? Simple. They weren't commanded to bring it. You don't bring it, Aaron's two sons. It was Aaron's job. They brought what was Aaron's job, the high priest's job, and put it on themselves if they can do it. You don't do that. You are profaning, you are bringing down lower God's name. Don't profane God's name. Those two lost their lives for it. Everybody else, at least these three cases, they lose their cleanliness for it. I'm officially out of time. Let's move on to New Moon before I finish off. Yes?
I just wanted to say that the Christians teach it differently about profaning. They say you're cursing or something is profaning him.
That's using God's name in vain or making it common. There's lots of ways which you can do it. Anything that brings God's name down low, you have profaned God. Any way of doing it. There are multiple ways of profaning God's name. In this case, we saw a case study how God used leprosy to teach people, you have profaned my name. I want to discuss all the different ways, the tools that God has at his disposal to teach someone who's profaned his name. Yes, okay.
So it sounds like God warned all Gehazi, Uzziah, Miriam, all these situations. There was always a warning from God.
In the case of Miriam, it doesn't describe a warning per se, but note how fearful she was when it called forth. There seemed a fear in her. She knew she did something wrong. So whether she was verbally told ahead of time, don't say anything bad about Moses or not, she knew whatever she did wasn't right.
For the
it could be. She was the older sister. Maybe she's a little animosity, a sibling rivalry. I don't know. But how it works. Yes, Deborah.
So it'd be fair to say that when they left Israel, it'd be fair to say that because, you know, the Maseroth, that they were familiar with the Torah and how to be and everything. Of course, you know, for me, the Ten Commandment movie, you know what I mean? But, you know, sometimes you have an idea of what something is. I mean, you know, when you hear
at this point, at this point in Miriam's life, she's very, very familiar with virtually every law there is now. She knows almost all of them.
They knew when they were out there about who they were anyway, because they wouldn't have said the stories they said, right? So, I mean, this was for us,
the Torah
was beginning to be written down for the law first mentioned to help us, because it wasn't going to be a living book that was going to be dictated to show us for ourselves,
It was being written down at this time. Actually, by Book of Numbers, it was probably mostly all written down with a few details out there. They knew what was right.
We see it,
they all knew what slander was. Yeah. That was commonly known.
Because people knew that they were different anyway when they were in the land of Goshen.
Right.
Anyway, because they were set apart and they would have mannerisms and behaviors that would be
consistent with their knowledge of the history. Okay. Now, you'll notice in these case studies, there are elements of each of these seven items. Well, not each. Most of these seven items. There are elements of them. Meaning, is there a slander? Well, yeah, Miriam slandered Moses. But she wasn't struck for slandering. It's profaning God's name. Bloodshed. Well, Naaman had bloodshed. He was a killer, but he wasn't struck for bloodshed. He was just had leprosy. He had no knowledge of it. But there's elements of some of these items, but there's not actually a source for it. But God points out in 22 that leprosy, or you're profaning God's name, he associates leprosy as profanement. You've done something specific that God's using as a tool. I'm not arguing that all humans who ever received leprosy or got leprosy profane God's name. That's garbage. I'm referring to these three case studies. All right, just these three the Bible talks about. We're not discussing somebody catching leprosy. We're discussing when God strikes someone with leprosy. These are the issues. The examples were given. Yes, Deanne.
But when Heavenly Father first presented himself to Moses, he did leprosy as a test with him.
That was the example of the hand. In his arm, it came out again. Leprosy. So God didn't strike. Was Moses doing something evil? No. Was Moses doing something profane? Not at all. It was showing an example of who has power over this and who does not. And that, of course, was then used to show to Pharaoh. Who has power over things that no human has power over? As the king here quite plainly pointed out when he did with Naaman, does this king of Syria think I am God? I can give life or not give life? I have the power of curing leprosy? That's absurd. Of course, the king of Israel didn't have that ability. But neither did Pharaoh. And everybody knew Pharaoh had that ability, nor any other person. But yet Moses seemed to have had this ability. It's a very strange and scary thing, because leprosy was a scary item. No, there was no known cure. No one knew what it was, because germ theory wasn't developed. No one had knowledge of what it meant. It was foreign concepts. Yes, Alma.
Elijah has a question.
Oh, go ahead, Elijah.
Did they have soap back then?
They did have soap, but the soap was not the type of soap you see today. The soap they would have used live water, which what they do is they take ashes and they mix it with water, dilute it, because it'll dissolve your skin. It's very caustic, a heavy base. I don't know what those words mean, but you will soon. The heavy base, it's kind of it's a slippery feeling. You use a soap, it's kind of slippery on your fingers. Well, caustic items are very slippery. They're soap, heavy base items are very slippery. They had ashes, usually from wood or some kind of a plant, and they mix with water and mix it and make it a lye water. The water has a mixture of ash into it. That kills most germs. And they would use that in a diluted form. But they also knew, be careful, don't use too much of it, because it'll hurt your hands. Much like leaving soap on your hands for a couple of days. It starts turning to blistery. That's what lye water did. They did have that, and they did use it for cleaning purposes. But that wasn't the dominant use. It wasn't the dominant use for the everyday person. That was the dominant use. The priesthood would use it, as well as others would use it too. The lye water was common. Yes.
The question that he had came about because he... You know, to have our hands clean nowadays, we use soap.
Soap, yes.
Not just water.
Not just water, correct.
The question was, like, why did God didn't tell them to use soap and water?
So yeah, that explains it. The priests were the ones who had the lye water available to them at all times. It was always there, ready to use. So the temple would be clean in that way. Anytime they had to clean something, the priests had to clean something in clothing and water for their use, not for commoners' use, but for their use, it was usually just plain water. However, sometimes they use lye water, in particular, on their bodies. There are four rules mentioned earlier when it comes to disease spreading. These are four rules that pretty much everybody in English should know if you speak English. There's isolation. Let me abbreviate. There's hygiene. There's sanitation. And then nutrition. Those are four rules that cure almost every disease known to man. If somebody's sick, you isolate them. Clean your body, hygiene. Clean your stuff, sanitize. And then have good nutrition. Eat well. Eat proper foods, not improper foods. Those four things will pretty much cure every disease there is. There are a few exceptions, but the most diseases covers. So in this case, we discussed this people, when you're dealing with soap, you're talking about hygiene and sanitation. In the case of the priests, they knew what hygiene meant. Clean your bodies. And the lye water was usually used for that purpose, for cleaning your body off. In the case of stuff, things, objects, they usually used just plain water to clean it. They could scrub it, whatever it was, but to clean it off. Whatever the dirt, grime, grease, that kind of thing. And then, of course, after that, then we deal with chapter 13, discussed isolation when somebody has a disease on their body. Keep them separate. Separate them out. And, of course, nutrition, just plain, it's obvious. Nutrition, eat well, eat proper. So those are four rules which we obey. So when you're dealing with soap, we call about hygiene and sanitation is where we would classify that. And that's what we do today in our modern world. Soap, for the most part, was almost unheard of in our modern world. It's about 1820s. That's when soap was actually then started to be used. People understood that if you clean something, you don't die from it. It was amazing. In the hospitals, was Florence Nightingale, right? She's one of the dominant users and comprehensions of how if you use soap to clean a hospital, people don't die of the muck that's coming off the walls from all the dead body parts. They were learning what hygiene was, learning how to kill things. Didn't know what germs were, but learned that muck and goop that comes out of our bodies makes us sick. It was a novel idea. They didn't know that before. They thought the goop was normal and that it had nothing to do with your sickness. But they had to learn that stuff. And that's stuff that's modern day learned. The priests in the Bible knew some stuff. They had rules about isolation. They had rules about hygiene and sanitation. And of course, we already know the rules of nutrition. Don't eat unclean things. And don't eat things that tore yourself. Does it make sense of what it was? So soap is more of a modern day thing. And more commonly used by everyday people because of modern day understanding. It wasn't always understood then. Now we know, but then they didn't always know. I'm way over time. I have to go to New Moon. I'm going to take... I was going to New Testament because I just had examples of what the curing of leprosy produced. It produced the opposite of what these were. So these three case studies showed the profaning of God's name produced leprosy by God on them. And New Testament in Mark and Luke gives examples of people who say who leprosy is cured and they flip it around. The person, when they're cured of leprosy, instead of profaning God's name, they lift it up as high as it can possibly go. They make it enormously important, the opposite effect of leprosy, of gaining it. So in Mark, as well as Luke, it gives you those examples, which we won't go to today, but they discuss it as far as when you reverse this. Mark 1, verse 40 and 45, and then Luke 17, verse 11 to 19. Gives examples of Luke 17, verse 11 to 19. They give examples of how the changing of leprosy around, a changing of the cause and the curing of leprosy produced the elevation of God's name, which is the opposite of how you got it, which makes sense. You don't profane God's name, you don't get leprosy. You lift God's name up high, you get cured of leprosy. It's pretty basic, pretty simple. I'm not saying every human got leprosy is cursed God or everybody cured from leprosy, praise God. But that's the symbolism we're taught to in the Bible, that's the element that God's trying to convey to us about what this disease is about and how to deal with it.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. Hallel.info.